Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Glad to see you all plowed through the snow to get here today. It's barely our first. My name is Blake McNulty. I'm this morning's representative from the church board. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please read those in the announcements listed in the order of service that is in your hand, and take it home if there's anything you want to especially remember. In addition, a few others I want to emphasize. LCUUC is organizing a lay pastoral care team, pastoral care team. If you would like to learn more about how you can help provide comfort and support to our members, please join us at the informational meeting Saturday, January 7 at 10:30. For more information, see Patty Walker. Patty always sits back there. Today's designated collection is for the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. I got a thing in the mail yesterday. I assume many people did. But you can see a description of that in the order of service. The Green Sanctuary Committee will meet today at 11:45. In classroom one. And Al Haskell has a brief announcement regarding stewardship.
Louder. Good morning. A reminder, there are these blue sheets out. We have our next scheduled new member orientation class. This is a great time to learn more about us and UUs as well. And whether you're an existing member or thinking about joining, it's open to you on that. So check into that and check with us later. I wanted to just kind of bring a thought to mind, if you will, and whether you're coming into LCUUC or going out into the world from LUUC, let's take a moment for Al to catch up to himself. Let's take a moment to think, to feel, to reflect, to remember, to vision our 14 years and where we're going. You know, with a combined effort, our members, our friends, and our people of all ages have worked to improve our world and to spread the values and principles that we hold dear of Unitarian Universalism. So many areas we touch, so many areas we work in. One facet for me, December always brings or begs me to consider our returning youth. These fine young people, some walking in just now, many of whom we've known since a preschool age. I won't point out the individuals whose diapers I've changed. But what joy and pride comes to us as many of them start coming here. Those that came at a very young age, grew up in this congregation, those that are growing up now. The individuals that are returning, these young adults, are very vibrant, very involved, very engaged. They're out in the world. And what they carry is the experience, the values, the experience that we all share together. May I humbly suggest the world gains from these people. and that you embrace them while they're here. Thank you.
I invite you to say hey to people sitting next to you. Yeah, peace be with you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you have been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk with you about that as well. If you're visiting with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages. At that time, they go to the religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or to remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the door to my right and across entryway if there's a need for child care during the service. Classes will end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought along some folks, please feel free to introduce them. Welcome. If any guests have brought themselves and would feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. We would enjoy meeting you. Welcome. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. You know the drill. Please turn off your cell phones. No texting during service. And so on. I hope you enjoy today's service, which is a rather unique one. Our speaker today is James Galasinski on bass. James freelances as a jazz musician in the Milwaukee area and is a member of the First UU Church in Milwaukee. He's currently pursuing a Master's of Divinity degree at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. But we get two of them. He's got his sidekick with him, sideman, Ryan Meisel on sax. Ryan grew up in Heartland and attended Arrowhead High School. He has a bachelor's degree in music performance from UW-Madison and a master's degree in jazz studies from Northern Illinois University. He now teaches at the Hartford School District.
know about birth. We know about death and how the light goes out of us, the life departing. But in this vast in-between, we proclaim meaning. In lighting our chalice, we hope to build bridges and bring the fire of enlightenment to all life, to speak mercy to everyone we meet, to live, not in slumber, but to dance the dream awake, and truly awake. Please open your hymnals to page 95. There is more love somewhere. Join me in the congregational reading. It is printed in your order of service. God, lead us now so we can walk wherein the prophet said that we would trod. Allah, subjugate our wills to answer you. Lama, show us the power's bright array, bless the climb, and make peace upon the universe's dark display. Vishnu, preserve us all along the way.
And we pray to every God, strike the bowl of heaven and remain the crown of all. Yeah.
the children to come on up forward for the story for all ages.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. First question. Anybody know what this is called? A double bass, yes. Not a cello. Cello is a little bit smaller. What are the two instruments Ryan has here? Saxophone, right. Not quite. Any other guesses? Correct. Soprano saxophone. Right. Good job. And the other one is, does anyone know what that's called? Saxophone, yes, but what kind of saxophone? It's a tenor saxophone. Okay. So, how does, Ryan, can you just play a couple notes? So how does Ryan make sound or music from that instrument? Does anyone know? That's correct. He blows into it. What else does he do? That's true. Buttons. They're not called buttons though. What are they? Keys. And would you like to say anything else about how you make music? Or?
As you put the keys down, the holes close, and as the holes close, the sound becomes loud, lower.
Okay, and just how does something like this make sound or music? You forgot. Anyone else want to? Okay. Right, pluck or use the bow. More specifically. Another question. Why do we do this? Why do Ryan and I spend hours, go to schools, practice, and to learn these? Why do we do that? For fun. That's part of it. Yeah, definitely. Does anyone else like to? Yeah, to make music. Very true. Those are very good answers. I think I would like to say that I make music, and I'm speaking on behalf of Ryan, to express ourselves. And it's music is really communication. It's a form of language. And the lesson I want to leave with you today is that as you grow and mature, you may play an instrument to express yourself. You may find writing. There's a million different ways you can express yourself, but I encourage you all, as you grow and learn, to make that as a goal of yourselves.
We'll have you remain seated and sing the children out, number 413, Go Now in Peace. Cooper, we'll have you come up to grab the lantern, and all the children wait until the lantern leaves before following out. And now is a special time in our service when we share our joys and concerns with each other in spiritual community. If you have something to share, raise your hand. The usher will bring you a microphone. Tell us your first name and then briefly tell us the joy or sorrow you wish to share. I will light a candle to represent this so that we may hold it in our thoughts and prayers for you. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys be multiplied. I'll light the memorial candle to symbolize that fire of enlightenment we purposely awaken in ourselves and in others.
Hi, my name is Beth, and I have a joy. This coming Friday, Chris has a very big, very special birthday coming, and we are looking forward to celebrating it with family.
Hi, I'm Barb. I'd like to light a candle. Not a concern, but just in remembrance for all our loved ones that have gone before us and come back to us in many ways this time of year. And a candle of joy that we all have this chance to be together now.
I'm Amy. Candle of joy for our nephew, Nick. He has spent most of this year in jail, but the joyous part is that he's home now, and we get to spend time with him later today, and I'm pretty excited about that. Thank you.
I'm Robert, and I'd like to have you light a candle of joy. I returned last Sunday from a week working in Haiti, and grateful for that opportunity, and very impressed with the work that the UUA and the UUSC is doing there, and their Haitian partners.
I'm Tom. I'd like you to light a candle of joy for my my daughter Rosa, who graduated from WCDC this past week. She's the first woman to ever finish the masonry program there. So sometimes I wonder if anybody in my family even knows there's a beaten path to stay away from.
My name's Tracy. A candle of hope for a good surgery on Tuesday. You've heard all I want for Christmas is my two front teeth. I'm asking to lose a thyroid gland. So, hoping for everything to go well. Send good thoughts to my surgeon. Thanks.
Tony, my husband, and I are fostering a beautiful 4-year-old Springer Spaniel, and it has been an incredible joy, and we would like to light a candle of hope that there's a family out there somewhere close by who would love to adopt him, maybe even before the end of the year.
I'll light our last candle for the joys and concerns we hold deep in our hearts.
For the meditation this morning, Ryan and I will perform a short piece by John Coltrane, and I just want to say that the piece we're going to play is entitled Alabama. It was written in response to the 16th Street Baptist Church bombings in September 15th, 1963. It was an attack by Ku Klux Klan members in Birmingham, Alabama, that killed 4 African-American girls. And we're going to play the piece and then take a few moments of reflective silence. hymnals to hymn 123. Selected two readings for today. The first one is from a historical marker in front of the house that John Coltrane lived in Philadelphia. It simply reads, John W. Coltrane, 1926 to 1967, a pioneering African-American jazz musician, composer, and saxophonist. Coltrane used African and Indian elements to create a distinctive style which at first shocked audiences, but ultimately gained wide acceptance. He lived here, 1952 to 1958. The second reading comes from an interview John Coltrane gave in 1966. My goal is to live the truly religious life and express it in my music. If you live it, when you play, there's no problem, because the music is part of the whole thing. To be a musician is really something. It goes very, very deep. My music is the spiritual expression of what I am, my faith, my knowledge, my being. When you begin to see the possibilities of music, you desire to do something really good for people, to help humanity free itself from its hang-ups. I think music can make the world better. And if I'm qualified, I want to do it. I'd like to point out to people the divine language, the divine in a musical language that transcends words. I want to speak to their souls. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. Good morning, everybody. It was John Coltrane's intention to live the truly religious life. This, of course, means that Coltrane thought there was an untrue or false religious life. The religious life of obedience, following rules, reciting creeds, this was not something Coltrane had in mind when he spoke about the religious life. Coltrane thought that in its most authentic forms, religion should not polarize, but instead help us create unity and to find meaning in our lives. In this sense, religion should challenge us to take a journey of self-discovery. Though he did not know it, I think Coltrane was in many ways a UU. Coltrane's truly religious life was characterized by constant spiritual and musical searching. This led him to creatively transcend tragedy, injustice, pain, and then to explore and embrace the truths of all religions. In this sermon, I hope that the whole service and the Ryan's playing included are able to give you a sense through music and through words what this man was and what his legacy is. I want to start out by giving a brief outline of Coltrane's life and then try to reflect theologically on his music and his life. John William Coltrane's spiritual journey had a humble beginning in a small North Carolina town called Hamlet. Shortly after his birth, he moved to another rural town in North Carolina, High Point. Both of John's grandfathers were ministers. He was raised a strict Christian, and his mother was said to be a very spiritual person who sang and played piano. His father was a tailor and also an amateur musician. In fact, Coltrane's father would close the door to his bedroom and practice his violin and ukulele almost every night. North Carolina in the 1930s was segregated and full of injustice. His cousin Mary, who lived with the family, told a biography that among all the other injustices they faced, their school used beat up and old textbooks and sports equipment that they got from the white school in the next town over. This is said to have bothered John Coltrane a lot. In a matter of time, his close-knit family broke up. Within a few months of each other in 1938, his maternal grandparents, an uncle, and an aunt all died. And then in early 1939, his father died, young and suddenly. Money began to be a problem, and his mother eventually moved to Philadelphia to find work. John stayed with a few remaining family members back in North Point while he finished school. Around the same time of these deaths in his family, Coltrane began to play alto saxophone and clarinet. Coltrane, a quiet introvert, responded to these deaths by playing his clarinet incessantly, closing the door, as his father did, shutting himself off to the world of death and injustice that surrounded him. Music became Coltrane's refuge. Music became Coltrane's father substitute. Music can be cathartic and a consistent friend when it seems like we have none. I think this is the essence of the blues from which Coltrane and other jazz musicians draw their inspiration. Emotionally acknowledging our problems can bring about small pockets of freedom. And I think this was the beginning of Coltrane infusing religion and music. This was also the beginning of Coltrane's legendary practice habits. He's said to have practiced between sets on a gig. Personally, sometimes the last thing I want to do after playing an hour and a half is play more music. And as I reflect on that, it would be the equivalent of Ryan right now going in the back and practicing for 20 minutes while I give the sermon. He also practiced off stage while other members of the group were playing. He would practice silently laying on his bed at night so not to disturb other people in his family and other apartments. And he even practiced during dinner parties. They would be having a dinner party and he'd get up, I need to go practice. Coltrane was to become universally regarded as being a technician of the saxophone. And to master any instrument takes hours and hours of practice. He was putting in the time and hard work to become a master musician. After high school graduation, he moved to Philadelphia to be with his family. In the 1940s and 1950s, Philadelphia had a lively jazz scene and a proud African-American community. At the same time, factions of Islam were spreading, and many of his friends converted to Islam. His first wife, Naima, whom he married in 1955, was a Muslim. He began studying Islam, and I imagine he must have wondered how there could be more than the one truth of Christianity he had grown up with. In this confusing and transitional time in his life, Coltrane also encountered heroin and alcohol. Alcohol flowed freely in his workplace, the jazz club. Heroin was the drug of choice in the jazz community. Some people even thought that to play jazz, you had to do heroin. But I can assure you that's not true. Practicing compulsively after the breakup of his family may have not completely relieved his pain, but just pushed it off. Despite his addiction, he was able to land a lot of work in blues and jazz bands. For example, he got a gig with one of jazz's all-time great groups, the Miles Davis Quintet. He was later kicked out because of his heroin habit. Confused, depressed, and out of work, he was probably at the lowest point in his life. But he used the firing as a wake-up call. He wanted to get off heroin and attempted to do it cold turkey. One can only speculate what exactly he went through, but we know that the withdrawal symptoms of quitting heroin can be severe and is not recommended by doctors. Symptoms may include sleepless nights, vomiting, body aches, cramps, headaches, and this call will last up to 2 weeks. During that time, he would have been physically unable to play his saxophone, his refuge. Instead, he must have relied on his family and perhaps some of the structure and order he was finding in Islam. Out of all this pain came a new Coltrane. He was awakened from ultimate low into a peak experience. He later wrote about it in the liner notes of his most famous album, A Love Supreme. Quote, "During the year 1957, I experienced, by the grace of God, a spiritual awakening, which was to lead me to a richer, fuller, more productive life. At that time, in gratitude, I humbly asked to be given the means and privilege to make others happy through music." He found that the hard work he was putting into music would only pay off if he would become a creative and healthy person that also worked and practiced hard at being a human being. He had to not only attack musical problems, but spiritual ones as well. Excuse me. Sober and spiritually recentered, Coltrane began to see his music as being bigger than himself. And he set out on one of the most creative periods in the history of jazz. You can hear something different in his playing from that moment on. There's less cliches. There's no witty or trite blues licks. You hear a seriousness. In the late 1950s, he rejoined Miles Davis to produce such classic albums as Kind of Blue. He experimented with rapidly moving chord changes. Shortly thereafter, he became extremely well known for the Indian dirge-influenced version of My Favorite Things. So by the early 1960s, he was polled by jazz magazine readers and critics as the best tenor and soprano saxophonist, not to mention having the best band, dubbed the Classic Quartet, which in many ways revolutionized jazz. If he would have stopped evolving then, he would have easily gone down in jazz history as an innovator with an individual sound, a great composer, and a master improviser. But he searched for more. He kept pursuing himself and the religious in his music. He kept experimenting. It is this never-ending pursuit of complex subjectivity, the introspective interrogation of his own thoughts and feelings, that is the hallmark of Coltrane's greatest performances. Coltrane reached a peak in popularity with the classic album, A Love Supreme. By the way, the album still ranks, I just saw this online, it ranks number 47 on Rolling Stone's 500 albums of all time. So he still gets recognition. He then became the leader of the avant-garde free jazz movement, a whole other genre of jazz that he fathered into existence. As his music became freer and denser, he added more instruments. His piano player and drummer quit, citing that they could not hear each other. Coltrane divorced and married again. His second wife, Alice, took over playing piano in his band. And it was very uncommon in those days for a female jazz instrumentalist, so in that way, Coltrane was a pioneer. He toured the world In Japan, he was treated like royalty. But he died abruptly of liver cancer at the age of 40 in 1967 at the top of his career. He left behind three sons, John Jr., Oran, and Rabbi, who is an accomplished jazz saxophonist himself, and he has a really uncanny resemblance to his father. Alice, his wife, kept Coltrane's legacy alive through music and by starting a Center for Eastern Spiritual Study. She passed away in 2007. It would not do justice to speak about Coltrane and not talk about God. Not only did he speak about God all the time in interviews and liner notes, but the title of many of his songs have religious connotations. Om, A Love Supreme, Son, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, Meditations, Song of Praise, the list goes on and on. His conception of God was not typical of a poor African American from rural North Carolina. He did not just tolerate or respect all religions. He has been quoted many times as saying that all religions were true. He studied Sufi mysticism, the Kabbalah, and the Bhagavad Gita. But it is not that he just read a book on religions either. As mentioned, he was raised a Christian, married a Muslim woman, and his second wife later became a Hindu guru. Some of his best friends were Buddhist. He lived multiple religions. The God that he believed in and talked about was not the Christian God. It was not Allah. It was not Vishnu. I think what the God he believed in was what theologian Paul Tillich called the God beyond God. This was not the transcendent God in the clouds with a gray beard. This was a God who was immanent, that passionately loves and shares in our pains and struggles cross-culturally. It is evident to me that Coltrane was a mystic who, like many of us here, experience a oneness with ourselves, others, and the universe from time to time, and actively seek that experience out. So what Coltrane meant by God was an inner experience that transcended words. It was both a unity with the world and a peace inside of him. This experience was what he wanted to communicate to others. And for him, the only way to properly express that feeling was through music. Because of his blatant mixture of the spiritual with jazz, many people are said to have been profoundly changed after experiencing his music. In fact, I have talked to numerous jazz musicians who have told me they don't go to church, they don't have a definitive spiritual practice, and they're not sure if they believe in God, but they do believe in Coltrane and what he exuded and stood for. And I say that I agree. I was introduced to Coltrane by watching a documentary during an undergraduate jazz studies course. And I experienced something outside the normal expected realm of music, a deep inner stirring within that after further reflection compelled me to keep exploring jazz, religion, and ultimately the ministry. In fact, my calling to ministry, my own personal path, is connected to the music of Coltrane in many ways. I use his music to meditate on an almost daily basis. It's my own little unique spiritual discipline that I do. For me, when I really experience his music, I'm transformed. I feel reborn in a sense. I feel awake. I feel as if all the events and happenings that have come before in my life have not meant much compared to the intensity of that moment. Further theological reflection on Coltrane makes me think that the contemplative experience is not a moment of perfect peace and serenity that other theologians and mystics may talk about. To be contemplative is to face the reality of life. And in the 1960s in America, the reality of life was racial injustice, and the need for change was apparent. In a sense, Coltrane's music, his sound, is freedom. And it's neither mysterious nor otherworldly, but rather it is the actual work of making freedom, grounded in the routine and everyday practice of doing and living. The quest for freedom is not something of the past or the future or for just certain times. It is a continuous struggle. Coltrane was immersed in the tradition of jazz, the turbulent political movements of the time, but yet had the courage to creatively pursue avenues outside of his own makeup. This sense of pursuit and striving for more is abundantly present in the music of John Coltrane in the 1960s. Coltrane's influence in music is still felt today. His identity in popular culture is constantly resurfacing from time to time. Today, a church in San Francisco, formerly called the St. John Will.i.am Coltrane African Orthodox Church, actually venerates him as a saint. According to their website, their main mission is to understand the divine nature of our patron saint in terms of his ascension as a high soul into oneness with God through sound. We have come to understand Coltrane in terms of his sound and as a sound in meditative union with God. End quote. If you ever are in San Francisco, services are from noon to 3. And you may have thought UU services were long. No. The spirituality of John Coltrane, I think, still speaks to us more than ever today. Coltrane viewed the creative process as a sacred act. I think we need to find outlets for creativity in our own lives and strive to become more and more creative people. Often, we may become too complacent and stop seeking. Maybe we have the nice job, the nice family, comfortable life in general. However, Coltrane's music urges us and reminds us that there's always something more. Not more things, but more meaning in life to pursue. At the same time, seeking for more should not be equated with never being content. When we become peaceful within ourselves and become content, we should strive for more and more peace, more and more contentment. Coltrane's life illustrates how pain and destructive happenings can be overcome by developing what I like to call pockets of freedom. These pockets of freedom soon collapse, but new freedom must then be pursued. The daunting task of creating ourselves is never really over. Coltrane was always looking for the next thing, the next creative inspiration, always trying to squeeze out the most as much as he could from the music. He would develop a musical pattern and explore that pattern with mathematical infinity. This is what makes Coltrane's music so powerful. Likewise, we need to persistently try to squeeze out the most meaning in our lives and explore ourselves in every direction possible. Coltrane did this, and his legacy, his music, asks us, what pain, what serious thing are we not facing that can get in the way of living the truly religious life?
We have a couple of minutes for polylog if anyone would like to share their thoughts or insights regarding the sermon today. Just raise your hand and the usher will bring you the microphone.
Good morning, my name is Kelly. Thank you for all of that. I lost what I was going to say. Thank you for the inspiration of trying to be creators. I believe that we all are creators, and that was beautiful what you said to the children about having to express yourself. And I'm definitely going to go home and listen to some of my John Colt right now. Thank you.
This is Tom. Well, thank you, first of all. I have a question, and it's for either John Coltrane or yourself. But how do you relate the spirituality of the creation of jazz to the spirituality of listening to the spirituality of jazz?
The question was, how do I relate the creation of jazz to the spirituality? I think... Well, I think improvising is a very unique form, art form, and there's something very immediate about it that the things that you've been practicing, things that you've been exploring, you know, in your practice room, and then when you're performing, you know, I think there's a mind game that we play, what musicians play. Maybe this is for all musicians, but especially jazz musicians. You know, they're playing, oh God, that riff I just played sucked, you know. What? Everyone's listening to me, that was just I just stole that from Charlie Parker. But when we're playing, there's a certain, I think, a certain meditative calmness you have to have, and you gotta throw out all these technical, logical things that you want to accomplish when you're playing, and you just have to let it all out and not care. And I find that's especially spiritual for myself, and I hope that it exudes to the members of the audience. I don't know if Ryan wanted to take a stab at that. Or
thank you for your words and your music. I don't know what the world would be like without music. And I think I don't create music, but I imagine that creating music is as powerful a spiritual experience as listening to it. It's kind of like one of those in-the-moment, flow experiences, you know, where you're just there. So, thank you.
I'm Tracy. I was thinking about one of the comments that you made. I don't know if it was your comment or what you're reading, where you said that when he was a little boy, he practiced the saxophone to express his grief. That was one of your comments, right? So all week long, the children at school have been expressing their stress over the holidays. And it's been very interesting. Some shut down. They walk in the door kind of daring me to make them do something. And they're 6 years old, you know. And others, I would just describe as wild, just wild. So as the adult who spends the day with them, I go from being sympathetic to being really frustrated to kind of riding that roller coaster with them. But when you expressed that when you said that this was how he expressed his grief, it really kind of helped me remember that when I'm watching them do this shut down, wild thing, for me to remember that they are expressing something. It might be inconvenient or irritating or annoying, but they have to express it somehow. I sometimes wonder if we always provide kids with a way to express those complicated emotions.
Hi, Mel. I very much appreciate Coltrane, the saxophone,
jazz as an art form. Jazz was my church in college. I started a jazz program that ended up being 12 hours. And although I can find a float off to introspection and a sense of things greater, and it's more so an instrumental. It's not hard for me to find things in life that I truly don't understand. That's very simple for me. But listening to jazz, and I don't know the chord structures, and I don't know the musicality of it, but it does take me somewhere, and it does bring me to both an outward thought as well as an internal thought. So I thank you for bringing this today.
I'm Angel. Two things. I'm a painter. That's what I do. And when I paint, I feel like I meditate. There's a certain place you go. And when I see a musician really getting into their music, I can see it in them. I can see that meditation. And that kind of draws me in, and I can see it draw other people in. It soothes the soul. Beautiful thing. The other thing is, I've always appreciated John Coltrane. My ex-husband borderline worshipped the man, and I never got that. I mean, there was even, like, when he'd say his name, there was a reverence in saying his name. And I kind of get that now. I understand. So thank you for that.
One more person, sorry. Thank you very much. I'm Anna, and I'm an art teacher. But so I was thinking, I like the question that you asked the kids, like, why do we do this? Because, you know, it's not something you can explain with words. There's really not words that explain why you do music and why you do art. But it's part of the human experience that's so essential and so important for everyone. And it's just a hard thing to grasp or to put into words. And so I really appreciated learning about a little more about John Coltrane, which I didn't know. I mean, I'm kind of ignorant when it comes to that. I appreciate jazz, but I don't know a specific artist very well. And when you played the Alabama song, I was literally just moved to tears. Like, I could feel that sadness in the music, and it was just amazing. So thank you for sharing.
All right. We have time for just one more.
Okay, I'm Ryan. I'm the saxophone player. I just want to say thanks to my mom, who's right here. I wouldn't be doing this if she didn't start me on violin when I was 4. Sorry to embarrass you. But I teach kindergarten through 8th grade up in Aaron School in Hartford, and I sympathize with the kids that come in because it's my job to sometimes I feel like entertain them when they're in their crazy shutdown periods, but also to enrich them, because without the music and the arts, those children don't have an outlet for those things in their life. And that's why it's so important to support those in our schools. That's just my little message. So, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. This is the time in our service where we collect the offertory to support our spiritual community. If you're visiting today, please know that you're our guest and a contribution is not expected. We also have the guest at your table boxes. If anybody has one, we'll take those as well. And the designated collection today is for the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. So any loose cash, or if you have a check that you'd like specifically to go to them, put UUSC in the memo line. Thank you.
Religion be to us life and joy. Let religion be to us a dissatisfaction with things that are, which bids us to serve more eagerly the true and right.
Let it be the sorrow that opens to us the way of
Let religion be to us the wonder and lure of that which is only partly known and understood. Let religion be to us security and serenity because of its truth and beauty, and because of the enduring worth and power of the loyalties which it engenders.
religion uniting us with all that is admirable in human beings everywhere.
Once you become aware of the force for unity in life, never forget it. Let it become part of everything you do. Your conception of that force for unity may keep changing, but make the goal of meditating on it remain the same, to uplift and inspire each other to realize more and more the capacity for living meaningful lives.